Thank you very much. Well, good morning, everyone, for the fourth time. Let me start with an apology and thank you, everybody, for your patience. With the line dropped a couple of times, and then we had a power surge, which knocked the lines out and also set off a fire alarm. We thought it was in the best interest to delay the call to 11:00 A.M. I can imagine you all had full mornings, so thank you for reorganizing your time this morning. I'm gonna make a few introductory remarks, and then I think the best value from this is a Q&A session. This is a pre-close statement, and it deals with the half year. The period has been very positive for us, and it's strong sales growth and generally good trading. The food businesses have worked hard to recover input cost inflation, and that's through both cost mitigation and through pricing where possible. Primark's traded really well, and that was certainly in the run-up to Christmas, but also after the festive season, and we've seen that in particularly January, but also February of this year. Really importantly for me, we've seen that improvement both in the U.K. and in Europe, which I think really sets it aside from really our performance in the second half of the last financial year. As a result, I expect the adjusted operating profit for the half year to be broadly in line with the same period last year. In other words, a few percent below, not least because Primark margin for the half year will now be above 8%. Turning to the full year, we're upgrading our expectations today for the group adjusted operating profit and adjusted earnings per share. At the close of the last financial year, we said that we expected adjusted operating profit and EPS to be lower than the previous year. We now expect both of those to be broadly in line, again, just slightly below where they were. So why is this? Our expectation for full year profit is now better for three of our businesses. And so let's start with the food ones first. So at Ingredients, we now expect profit to be well ahead of last year, certainly at the half year, but also in the full year. And that's really good recovery of input cost inflation at Mauri. But then it's really also strong trading both at Mauri and the ABFI with higher volumes. And I suspect a lot of that is about a recovery for the customers that buy ingredients from us. The second one is our grocery business. And I know there's been maybe some concern about the margin decline in our grocery business. And, you know, I've said really quite consistently for more than a year now that you should expect that as pricing does lag the input cost inflation. Margin will still be down year-on-year, but we do expect better sales and that will lift the operating profit enough to bring the profit for the full year to again be broadly in line with last year. I suspect most of you had a few tens of millions lower profit before. And then, of course, we need to come on to Primark. And trading certainly has been stronger than expected in the first half. It's very evident in the sales numbers that we've given you. And that was certainly driven, obviously, by pricing, but very, very strongly by strong footfall in all of our stores. And that increase in footfall led to a high number of transactions. And, of course, our volumes were up. I think for understandable reasons, we remain cautious about consumer discretionary spending in the weeks ahead. And as we move into the second half, we also lap tougher comparator periods because certainly the last few months, I think, have certainly benefited from softer comps driven by the consumer reaction to Omicron. But we now believe that sales growth will be ahead of our expectations in the second half of the year. So not at the run rate of the first half, but maybe better than we were expecting. And so as a result, and also with some lower costs, Primark's full year margin will now be over 8%. Let's talk about Rita Baxter Sugar. So I think we updated you on the much lower crop, sugar crop, in the UK. I think I've said to you all that starting with a 7, I've never seen in my times at ABF. So never say never that it won't come back again, but, you know, if I can characterise it as an unusual event, then that would be the way to do it. And so the adjusted operating profit for the full year for sugar probably will be broadly in line, but I think probably now a bit below where it was last year. So those are the major movements in adjusted operating profit that are driving the upgrade. So it's primarily Primark, grocery up a tad, and then grocery up, ingredients rather, up a number of tens of millions for the full year. The thing I'd also like to address is the cash outflow. And the important thing here is to give you some of the main movements behind the 900 million outflow. So compared to last year, I think I've really set out the key drivers of that. The first one to remember is that inventory levels at Primark this time last year were at low levels. You'll remember all of the supply chain issues that we were facing over the half year leading up to then, and our level of stock cover was below where we wanted it to be. And probably we had lost some sales as a result. Our stock levels are certainly back. And so the 900 million outflow is certainly driven by that. The other thing that we're certainly seeing is, surprise, surprise, if you've got positive working capital, then the effect of inflation on certainly your stock and receivables, net of your creditors, is also there. The other one about Primark is when you're looking at inventory, we've also got a store estate, which is some 5% bigger. So remember that the business is actually outgrowing. So the other thing about the year-on-year movement is a higher level of CapEx than I think we've become accustomed to in the lead-up to COVID. So you'll probably remember that the CapEx level then was about 800-850 million. It dropped a little bit during COVID, not surprisingly, because of the difficulty of getting things done. The number that I'm looking at for this last year is probably over 900 million. And, of course, I'm pleased with that. So that shows the pickup investment in Primark, and that not least given the acceleration of the investment in Primark stores, but then also IT and also the warehouses. And also we've got some very big food projects which are underway. So the statement really sets out, I think, the trading performance for each division, and I think I shouldn't take up too much time on that. Okay, just one thing I would like to highlight. Primark's store opening program is really beginning to drive growth in a meaningful way. And so what pleases me is that at the half year, that Primark total sales were up 16%, and like-for-likes were up 10. So what's driving the six between the two? Well, five of it is driven by the new stores. But interestingly enough, probably three and a bit of that is actually the increase in the average selling space. The other bit is better productivity in those new stores. I can't tell you that every store has opened with sales densities better than the existing estate, but virtually all of them have, and some of them in a very significant way. So, you know, we're back to that very meaningful contribution to a sales growth coming through from that. Just maybe another comment about the abatement of inflation. So we've certainly seen, obviously, less volatility, and in a number of areas, input costs going down. And so when you come to Primark, in particular, sea freight has gone back to where it was. The exchange rate is certainly better than where it was. You know, 120 against the dollar is way better than 110 that we were looking at for some time last year. But the thing to remind you is that the benefits of that will come primarily next year, next financial year. Those higher costs are baked in to the stocks that are in the warehouses now, and that will be sold through to probably about July of this year. We'll start to see those lower costs come through in August and September. And that's also the reason for the slight upgrade on that in that front for Primark today. So with that, and a hurried run through there, let me open to questions. And I think there is protocol that you put your questions forward, and then I'll call out who to answer the questions to.
Thank you. To ask a question, you will need to press star one and one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. To withdraw your question, please press star one and one again. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star one and one. We will now take your first question. One moment, please. One moment. Oh, there we go. And your first question comes from Grace Smalley from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I have three on Primark, please. Firstly, on the Primark like-for-likes, could you actually quantify what level of growth you expect in the like-for-likes in the second half and what that embeds in both in terms of pricing and volume? My second question would just be on the U.S. I think it'd be really helpful if you could comment on the U.S. expansion and the initial results you've seen from the recent acceleration in store openings. And then lastly, on Primark margins, clearly you've given the guidance today for 2023. As we look forward to 2024 and beyond, what do you think are reasonable margin targets for Primark, and how quickly can Primark return to double-digit operating margins? Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Grace. Thanks for those questions. So let me hit the first one. So at the second half, so those like-for-likes of 10%, I would expect to be lower in the second half, and, you know, maybe 3% lower or 2 percentage points off or whatever in the second half. What would that be primarily driven by? I expect, obviously, a similar level of like-for-like from the prices. So remember, we moved the prices in August, and, you know, so the continuity lines all saw the increase there, and that will carry on into the second half. Probably I would see a higher bit of pricing from spring, summer than we had for autumn, winter, because I think probably a slightly wider part of the range. Remember, not everything we saw price increases on, but I think slightly wider percentage of the portfolio will go through. So a bit more from pricing. The reason that I think the benefit from volume will be, I think we don't have those softer comps as we go into the second half. And, you know, I would aim off a little bit, but it would not surprise us if consumers on the volume front are just a little more careful in the second half. So that's where I'd be. But certainly, you know, in any other year, strong like-for-likes, but less than the number we've got in the first half. U.S. expansion. So we've opened three stores, and they really are trading well. And some of them are trading exceptionally well. So the comment that I made earlier on about, you know, the sales densities in those stores are really good. And so Queens in particular. And you'll notice that the total sales that we're getting from the U.S. Are up 12% compared to up 4%. So obviously we've had a very strong sales, and that's from new stores, but as well as the underlying like-for-likes from the U.S. So, you know, how do we feel? We've actually signed really quite a big pipeline of stores now to secure that increase in the number of stores. Remember, it's 60 by 2026. And I think this is really going to be a story that I think we all need to watch. Maybe some comments on the U.S. performance, the saying, well, okay, well, it looks as though the underlying like-for-likes looked a bit soft. Certainly in the lead up to Christmas, where we were lapping in the United States, the stimulus checks. So the stimulus, COVID stimulus checks, certainly for, shall we say, that lower demographic, really were significant. Now, that support came off as we came into this new, well into the beginning of 2022, and actually we've seen an uptick, interestingly enough, in our like-for-likes, certainly because we had not the very tough comps of last year, but they've improved. So at the moment, I'm excited by the Primark expansion in the U.S. Coming on to margins, I mean, I suppose it's a statement of the obvious that if we're starting this year in 2023, with a margin in the eights rather than a margin in the sevens, then, you know, that target of at least 10%, certainly looks I suppose the length of the runway to get there and the deliverability of it looks better. And so, you know, what are the things in our favor for next year? I think currency, as long as it stays where it is, there or thereabouts. So no massive headwind that previously we would have been thinking about. And then, of course, sea freight back to where it is and energy costs lower. And then I think the position for our suppliers. So there was a massive demand for goods from our suppliers. Well, maybe not surprisingly, a lot of that volume demand has gone down, and I think Primark will be well placed. So it really does, to me, feel like there are tailwinds that would support margin expansion next year. But obviously, I'll aim off giving you a feel for the number. Thanks, Grace.
Perfect. Very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now go to our next question. One moment, please. And your next question comes from the line of Clive Black from Shore Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Well, good morning. Thank you. Thank you for taking the questions and the presentation. Two, if I may, as well, just around CapEx. First of all, John, you talked about major grocery or major food projects. Could you give some color around that? And then second, given the elevated CapEx base you've touched about already, what about the returns you anticipate going forward from both Primark and in the food business, please? Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Clive. So yes, I mean, it is obviously couched in the terms of the total expenditure for the group probably going up towards more the billion mark over the next couple of years. So let's talk about food, first of all. I think what pleases me about the food capital projects is it really is about capacity expansion. So if you look at our only yeast extract business, we're looking at, you know, capacity upgrade in Hamburg. Our enzyme business, you know, we have spent some money on pilot plants and improvements to the facility there. And of course, a very, very big project is the new sugar mill in Tanzania. And let me spend one moment on Tanzania. That market is, for me, an exciting one in the sense that we have a really strong retail brand, but our volumes are constrained such that we can't get to the whole of Tanzania. You know, we are building this new factory, actually with the government as our partner, so they're very, very keen in terms of increasing domestic supply of sugar in Tanzania, and I think that will come through well. So I'm rather pleased those projects in food are about increasing capacity going forward. If you come to Primark, then really I think it's across three areas. Obviously, the addition of the selling space, so to get back up to the million square feet of selling square feet each year, but also IT, but so given, you know, the building of our digital capability, and not least, you know, the start of the support for click and collect. And then also the, I think, a very good payback in terms of the investment in the warehouses. And so moving towards fully automated warehouses are right across the piece. We're pretty well there in the Czech Republic. We'll see, very soon we'll be there in Ireland. but you know, there's still some to go and some benefits. Clive, the you know, my benchmark for CapEx, and I think I've always said this before, is, you know, I'm looking for returns of over 15% as a pre-tax return on those investments, and that remains the case for this.
Thank you, John. That's very clear. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. We will now go to our next question. And your next question comes from the line of Anne Critchlow from Societe Generale. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning. And two questions, if I may, please. So the first one is about trading at Primark, which does look very strong through the half. I just wondered how volatile that's been week to week and whether you saw any big spike around the warmer weather in February and so on. And then secondly, just to talk a little bit about the website and whether you think the website in the UK has been driving footfall into the stores. I know it must be difficult to strip out, but perhaps you can track it somehow. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Sam. Good to hear you. So one of the reasons I hate like-for-likes over a short period is, yeah, they do bob around, and, you know, for a variety of reasons. I mean, and if I can characterise January and February, actually January was very strong for us. So that was very strong. And whereas I would certainly say into February, still well ahead. But I would say of the two periods, that was the softer of the two. If I were looking at the trading from, and I think this is quite instructive, from September through to the end of the year, we were very encouraged actually by September, early October, because if you can cast your mind back, that was the first spell really of cold weather. And so people were buying, you know, cold outerwear for going out, or for that matter, keeping them warm inside. October was much softer. And so the light collapse had fallen back, and then it really accelerated, and we had a really good November and December, you know, for the Christmas period. So that's really, I think, how I'd characterise the like-for-likes over maybe shorter periods of time. The second question is the one about the website. The website is very exciting for us. You know, it's got to be the basis for that digital engagement with our customers. And remember, we're coming from a background where the website at best was a, if you like, a magazine showing some of the latest things rather than the place that you could go to sort of look in the comfort of your own home or wherever you are to see what the whole of the Primark range is. You're right, you know, sort of measuring what people look at on the website going through to the actual stores is hard. But the thing that we really find most encouraging is, so if you look at the UK, the traffic is certainly double where it was. The number of pages that people are dwelling on is at least double where it was. But it's the store checker which is starting to really come through. So at least one in five visits, people are going to the store checker. Well, you're not doing that just out of fun, are you? You are planning, you know, a visit to the store. And I think in Ireland, I think actually the store checker is possibly even higher. I think so for me, without the sort of the detailed diagnostics of somebody looked at the website and then it's found inside the store, that use of that facility, I think, is probably for me one of the best indicators for this. Just as a reminder, the website is now in the Republic of Ireland. I mean, they loved it in the first couple of weeks. So, you know, the store traffic was well up, you know, on the traffic for the earlier website. And, of course, then we told you in the statement of where it's going to go next. I think it's a very, very important building block for us. And, obviously, we'll add more facilities to that as we go forward. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Anne.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now go to the next question. One moment, please. And your next question comes to the line of Georgina Johanan from JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got two, please. The first one was just in terms of the path back to a double-digit operating margin at Primark, just following on from Grace's question. I mean, am I right in understanding that with freight normalizing, that should be something in the region of, you know, 200 plus basis points of benefit minimum, potentially even larger, and therefore actually you could be back to a double-digit margin as early as fiscal 24, or is there something I'm missing there, please, John? And then my second question, thanks for the update in terms of the website. I was just wondering if you could provide a bit of colour around how the click and collect trial is going. So are you seeing, you know, is that driving incremental footfall into those particular stores? What are you seeing on returns rates and so on and so forth? Thank you very much.
Great, thanks very much. Well, Georgina, if I said yes to your first one, I think everybody would get very excited that we're back to 10% next year. I think, unfortunately, the answer to that is I don't think that is the case. So what was the freight contract that we had? So we had a fixed price contract for fiscal 22, and so we really missed a lot of that very big increase in sea freight prices. We then came into this year, and the first two quarters of this year are freight costs at higher but still below the spot for each quarter. And then for the second half of this year, we're back to, and we've got a new contract with Maersk, that would mean that we're really back to the pre-COVID levels. So I'm not quite sure where your numbers came from, but I don't think it's, you know, 2 percentage points or 200 basis points. But let me put it this way. It is an important improvement. But remember, it's for the first half of this year, and certainly we weren't seeing the top of the market. But definitely a benefit and a significant one going into next year. Look, I mean, it's lower energy costs. It's lower freight. And I suspect our supplier prices, we should be sharper on those, not least because they're not so much in demand, and also there's been some of their commodity prices go down. Okay? But the second question was
website cover.
Yes, okay. Click and collect. Okay. So the first thing to go is, everybody reads these words so carefully to see what you are saying and not, or you're not saying, but first of all, it's been running for maybe 10 weeks now. So I think the time really to come back with the diagnostic of what we're seeing, and then also what our plans are, I think is in April at the half year results. And so, you know, let me hold my comments until then, because I think that's the time when we can give you a bigger feedback. And as you can imagine, there are some things which are great, and then there are some things you go, oh well, maybe that's not quite to expectation. So you want to look and take all of those things into account. So at this stage, Georgina, I'll hold it at that, but we'll give you, promise you a fuller review in April.
Understood. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now go to your next question. And your next question comes from the line of Richard Chamberlain from RBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks very much. Morning, John.
Good morning.
Couple for me, please. First, I just wondered if you can just comment a little bit more on the performance of recent store openings, how quickly they are, how they're performing, and how quickly they're sort of ramping up, and whether you expect a sort of similar conversion to sales in the second half. I guess the space pipeline is going to accelerate. And then the second one was just on UK labour costs for Primark in view of minimum wage and any cost efficiencies you're seeing there, please.
Great. Okay, thank you. Right, yeah, cheers. Thank you. So I think, honestly, the ramp-up really does really does depend on where we're opening. So, you know, actually one of the store openings was the best one I've ever seen, in that the one near Naples, we were getting queues outside the store every morning of the week after we opened. So not just the first morning, but you know, for, so, you know, the Primark, it really is all about, I think, brand awareness and how strong that brand awareness is where we're going. So Italy, I think, is a really an amazing country for opportunity for us. They really do love us there, and I think those ramp-ups are immediate. Bucharest, so here we go. So I haven't been into Romania and so on. Really strong. So that comes through. I then would say somewhere else like Poland, a slower belt. And I think in parts of the United States, I think if we're moving, now we're in, what's very encouraging there is where we've got some stores established, like the greater New York metropolitan area, we are increasingly known in that area, and we're seeing, but still, but it is a ramp up that will take a couple of years. I think as we move into the Carolinas or Maryland, or start to move further west in the US, where we are less known, then I expect that ramp up to maybe take 2 or 3 years. So I think your comment, your question, I think is a good one. But I think as we move into even more real white space in parts of the United States, I think we should probably see maybe a lower initial productivity from those stores. In terms of labour, I don't want to say exactly where we'll come out with the in terms of the UK, the increase is actually in April. But let me put it this way. We are very aware that, you know, a number of our employees, particularly in the stores, are closer to living wage and minimum wages, and I think recognise that at the very least, those people at that sort of level are getting CPI, if not CPI, slightly plus. So I think we'll keep a close eye on labour availability, which it hasn't eased totally. It's not as acute as it was, but I think certainly something to keep our eye on. You mentioned cost efficiencies, absolutely. So the automation in the warehouses is a key one, where obviously you're talking about people on much higher wage rates. But I think the thing that we are looking at is, and I didn't put anything in the statement, but it is self-checkout. So, you know, we are increasingly encouraged by that. And I think looking at really the capital cost of achieving it and how best to do that. And I think that's one to keep your eye out for if you like, a meaningful contribution to that in the coming years. Thanks, Richard.
Got it. Okay. Thanks a lot, John.
Thank you. We'll now go to our next question. One moment, please. And your next question comes to the line of Paul Rossington from HSBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. Two, please. Can you just say whether we should expect any further working capital or inventory build in the second half of the year across the wider group? And then my second question would be, to what extent do you think the Primark business is currently benefiting from customers trading down as opposed to kind of underlying market sustainability or stability? Thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay. So working capital. There's no doubt that we've seen a big increase in working capital. And I think, let me put it this way, I think there will be a renewed focus on our working capital for the second half, and I think it will be one that we look at carefully. The working capital will come down in some areas, so remember that the sugar inventories will come down, which is that Northern Hemisphere build in the first half, actually will come down. I think in terms of maybe safety stocks, by a number of businesses, which, I think was absolutely right to ensure continuity, if not better pricing, for some of the imports. I think we're not seeing really supply chain disruption. So I think those are the areas that I think we would look at, as well as probably the number of weeks cover at Primark. So I think it will be an area for focus for the second half. I wouldn't see a, other than the sugar decline, a big fall. But I think we can be, I think, Paul, quite frankly, it should be now a focus for us in the second half. Trading down, it's the old chestnut, isn't it, for Primark. And it's one that I've never liked around Primark. Yeah, I think you've all known that, in that, trading down has a temporal feel about it. And, when you get your money back, you go back to where you came from. Maybe I believe this because, I'm Primark through and through, but I think the loyalty we get when people come to Primark is huge. And I think what we are seeing over this time is a number of people who are making the choice, because we're seeing people, the switching data I've seen shows people coming to us. I think that, for me, what is not to like? I mean, maybe you're into ultra high fashion or whatever it may be, but if you're into stuff that all of us want, Primark's got it, from, and it isn't just one or two items, but it's the range. So it's great value, and clearly people, actually enjoy the experience of shopping in store. So, yeah, of course, could there always be some who go, well, I'm a bit down on my luck, and maybe it's just Primark that will do for me. I think the vast majority say, this isn't a trade-off. And then Primark becomes, I think, a regular part of the repertoire. The switching analysis, to me, has never shown massive switching away from us. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now go to the next question. And the next question comes from the line of Adam Cochrane from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, John. Just a quick one on grocery, if that's okay. When you think about the catch-up of pricing versus input costs, as we look forward over the next 6 to 12 to 18 months, when do you think you'll be able to start to recover your EBIT margins in grocery? And as input costs come down, do you actually then get more pushback from retailers on trying to pass through the prices when they can see the raw materials coming down? Thanks.
Adam, thanks. Thanks for asking me about grocery. So I've been really very happy to talk about it. The interplay between ourselves and the retailers is clearly going to be a dynamic as we look forward. So what phase are we in at the moment? Let's make it very clear that we are still in the phase of price increases going through, Adam, that are recovering the very big increases in input costs that we've seen to date. And although the inflationary increases have abated, many of them are still going up. So there's a difference between inflation and deflation. So, and that will inform my comment about the retailers in a moment. So I think that we will see that margin hit to grocery. Clearly, if I'm guiding to the full year profit being in line with last year, but it's going to be down in the first half, then we are slowing that margin decline. So my expectation would be that, we'll obviously have the full year benefit of the price increases we've taken this year. Oh, and by the way, it's very evident that you can start to see those, that the effects of those prices coming through, the grocery up sales 10% compared to 9% only a few weeks ago. So clearly it's more than that in those last few weeks. You said about costs coming down. So, there are a number of things. Remember energy, which drives a lot of the input costs, is still higher than pre-COVID levels. And so we may get to the place where some commodities are deflationary, but I'm not seeing too many of those at the moment. I've seen prices coming back in a lot of these commodity areas, but I haven't seen them going back below where they were. So in terms of, negotiations with the retailers, it's a hot topic at the moment because, the end consumer clearly is going to be resistant to the price increases, puts pressure on the retailers, puts pressure on us. The thing that I do feel is that we've still got a ways to go here in terms of our recovering the input costs that we've got.
So is it fair to say that it's taken you longer than you originally thought to get those price increase, or maybe just the inflation's been higher than you anticipated? Are we going to get back to the sort of pre-COVID margins or not, I suppose? What sort of time frame? Is it 1 year, 2 years, or hard to tell?
I appreciate that question. I didn't like the first part of the question because, the anticipation is it's about what packs have you got and what do you see. Look, what really has happened here, Adam, is it was the scale of that inflation that I don't think anybody was expecting when, you were back at the back end of 2021. And so first talking to the market really about inflation was, January of 22. I think even then, I didn't expect the scale of it. So, it is, across our food businesses this year, you've probably got the thick end of $1 billion. Of higher costs coming through. And so, it isn't like something you do on a Friday afternoon. I've got it in here. It is a management priority. And in some ways, you go, well, actually, even with the profit being close to last year, given the scale of the hundreds of millions that are affecting each business, then that's where it was. So I think not having seen the scale of this inflation, to be where we are, I think is good. And look, you're then into, well, is it one price increase or is it two in a year, having gone from years whether or not. So it's not over. The inflation thing isn't over. And I suppose I'm giving a broader message there, Adam, which is you start to go, well, okay, well, prices are coming down now, it's over. There are still our price increases, which are still planned here. And, you could be many, many months in the negotiation on the settlement of that. Okay?
That's great. Thanks.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. We'll now go to the next question. And your next question comes from the line of Gary Martin from Davy. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Morning all. Thanks for taking my questions. Just a couple of questions here on Primark. Just firstly, on European trading in Primark, has this reached pre-COVID levels? And do you think there's been any market share expansion in continental Europe in H1? That's my first question. And then just secondly, just touching on labour cost again, just bridging Primark operating profit from FY22 to FY23, would you be able to provide an indication of quantum of labour cost increases of a headwind margin in FY23. Thanks.
Great. Okay. So thanks, Gary. So the first one is where are we? In Europe. So the like-for-likes in Europe are on a 3-year stack are a bit below pre-COVID levels. So in fact, recent trading, probably very low single digit. So, that minus 16 that we had in the second half of the last financial year has massively improved to where it is. Now, what I would say, maybe you would say that anyway, John, is getting absolutely back to pre-COVID levels is what's needed. You would like that, but it's really for me all about the sales density. So putting Germany to one side, we've got sales densities in Europe back to where we need them for the profitability of the business. So rather than just here is a benchmark and everything isn't good unless you actually get there, I think getting close to the pre-COVID levels for me almost sort of really draws a line under that COVID recovery. Oh, and by the way, I think we really are seeing this year some of those volume increases against Omicron affected last year, particularly in Germany. I mean, our German sales are year on year up 12%. And that's because, you know, there were government restrictions requiring COVID passports to get into the stores. And so that performance, I think, is good. You asked about market share. Well, the ones that we're getting more data on the markets. The Spanish market in particular would be one which would say that our market shares are either in line, if not slightly ahead. But of course, we've added some selling space. So I think we're into the UK, which is probably way over delivered. We're well ahead of pre-COVID levels now, just a bit below the continental Europe. I think it's game over as far as that's concerned, and this is a basis that we can move from. Gary, sorry, just ask me the second question again, if you don't mind. Yeah, labor costs.
Just on labor costs, just bridging between FY22 and FY23 operating margin, just how big, what's the magnitude of labor costs there? Like,
right. Well, I'm loath to give you a number, but let's put it this way: in terms of our overheads, the labour cost is the major driver of that, and not least in northern continental Europe, where that is. So, in terms of an inflationary increase, the higher percentage given. Given the fact that we have a number of particularly store employees closer to the living wage and the minimum wage, I think we are seeing a higher inflationary number in that. It is significant, but obviously we've factored this in. But it's also why, going back to Richard's question, that the area of cost efficiencies, you know, in the stores, ways that we can mitigate that, I think, becomes even more important. Thanks, Greg.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thank you. We will now go to our next question. And your next question comes from the line of Nick Coulter from Citi. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Morning, John. Thank you for hosting the call. To Adam, actually, on grocery, please, if you could quantify or talk to the price-volume dynamic in the half, and I guess if there's a mixed impact in there as well. And then I have a couple of follow-ups on Primark, if I may, please.
Right, OK. Look at the... So I suppose, yeah, Nick, I mean, you're talking about grocery. So first of all, let me just comment on ingredients, if I may. We've not only had price increases, but volume increases, and that's why that's why the ingredient segment is doing as well as it is. In terms of the grocery segment, then yes, there is some volume decline on some of our brands. So yep. It won't surprise you that, you know, we have seen some in some categories trading down, or for that matter, a move to own label in some of the others. And so I think whether you go from bread through to cereals, then we have seen some volume offset there.
And do you think that volume switches at some point this year, or is it into next year that you see a flat or positive volume dynamic?
I certainly don't expect that. I mean, look, there is some... Sometimes there's that initial reaction to price increases. And actually, in some categories, we saw some initial quite big ones. but then they've actually come back. So I would expect the volumes to reassert themselves as we go into next year.
Great, thank you. Just a couple on Primark, please. Firstly, just come back on the new stores or space impact, specifically in the second quarter. I mean, it looks super strong, like double-digit strong. Should we continue, should we expect that to wrap around? Should it continue for the stores already opened? And then secondly, apologies, another one on pricing. If you're able to share the level of pricing that you achieved in the first half, please.
Right, okay. And that's pricing in Primark you're asking about, yeah?
Yes, please.
Yeah, okay, fine. Look, I mean, in terms of the stores, I mean, our experience is that when stores open well, they continue, okay? We don't see a massive drop-off. So those that are trading their socks off, actually, I expect them to continue. So then the question is, how will the other stores that we open in the second half, how do they contribute to that? But I think, a lot of the locations that we're looking at, I think should be trading well. So I think a strong new store contribution to the sales increase, I think should be a feature that we're looking at on an ongoing basis.
It's at the same level as the second quarter, John, or should it taper? Because it's very strong in the second quarter, or seems that way.
Yeah, all right. I wouldn't say quite that second quarter, because I hate extrapolating, sort of 8 weeks Nick across the piece, but still strong, okay?
Thank you.
But I wouldn't extrapolate it at the same rate.
Thank you. And then pricing, if you would.
Yeah, okay. So look, I'll give it to you. So the average price increase that we're looking at in the first half, maybe some 8 to 9%. Price realization, a little lower than that. And so what we have seen is probably 1 or 2 percentage points of negative sales mix. And so that to me is not surprising, where if somebody's going into, if it's men going in to buy shorts, going for the lower price shorts on the higher one. So I think price realization, maybe about 7% in the first half.
Super. Thank you, sir.
Right, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now go to your next question. And your next question comes from the line of Anubhav Malhotra from Liberum. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my questions. I've got a couple on Primark, really. Firstly, on the margins, maybe if you could help me differentiate a bit between the UK and continental Europe in terms of the extent of margin declines you have been seeing in both of markets, and really it coming out of the fact that they are very different like that you are seeing, and maybe a slight different in the cost pressures in both these markets also. And then the second one was on Germany, and if you have any update on the review of the store portfolio there. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Okay, so yes, I mean, the effect of the like-for-likes, and you're absolutely right, and it does, given the better like-for-like performance in the UK, that means that the UK margins are very strong and absolutely back to where they were, driven by the sales densities. Now, of course, what you have got is you've got that decline in the gross margin, which of course is affecting all of the stores across the estate. So the bigger effect on the margin is that on the net margin is that declining gross margin, which we're seeing whether it's Europe or the UK. The second order effect then is where the sales densities have come back to, and it's better in the UK than in Europe. But that's very much the second order effect. So I think, the nub of your question is, a recovery of margins in Europe. I would expect them to recover to the very good levels as we improve the gross margin. And, the like-for-likes being a little bit below pre-COVID levels, I think is very much a second order effect. It's really driven by those gross margin recovery. and that's going back to exchange rates, and it's going back to, you know, the sea freights and all of the costs that go into that. Just coming on to Germany for a moment, I mentioned earlier on that we've got a good sales level in Germany overall. You know, the fact that I mentioned that sales are up year on year 12% was really to indicate to you that, you know, it's not a one-way trip, that, you know, there was a real effect, and probably a bigger effect in Germany as a result of the restrictions relating to COVID. And obviously this year we're recovering from that. But sales densities are lower than we should have, but really to give us a decent net margin. And to give you a feel, you know, sort of the average German sales density is probably half what it is in France. And so, you know, the fact that we're looking at both the number of stores that we've got and then also how big the stores are in our existing, we're looking at both of those things. I'm going to put it off into April on this one to give you a fuller update. But I think by then, you know, discussions with landlords and not least works councils, we should have a clearer view of them going on. But direction of travel is very clear.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now go to your next question. And your next question comes from the line of Shweta Mahamkali from UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Good morning, John. Thanks for hosting the call. Just a couple of questions. One to follow up on the previous question on Germany, please. Just in terms of expectations in April, and are we likely to get a clearer picture in terms of the number of stores and space and how we should think about profitability from the repositioning exercise, or is that a little bit too much to expect already in April? And the second one is on the US. Given your expansion there and the comments on sales densities earlier in the call, can you also share any thoughts in terms of how we should think about profit contribution from the US this year and perhaps going into next year? Any color there will be super helpful. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Sudha. I think if it's the full picture for Germany, I think you'll be disappointed in April because, you know, you've got multiple counterparties here really to discuss with. So not least, you know, work council for each store and obviously landlords for each store. What I think you will get probably is certainly a very clear picture on where, particularly where we've got freeholds of stores. So it's what's in our gift. And so I think you get quite a clear picture on that, as well as likely where there are downsizings. I think that will be a full picture. So I think so it will probably stop a little bit short of really that full picture that probably you would like. But let me say the following. It's not tinkering at the edges on this one. So it will be an important restructuring. And so for a business that is close to break even at the moment, then I would have every expectation that, you know, we should be getting maybe not double digit net margins from Germany, but certainly higher single digit margins from it. And I think that's very possible. It's really taking out that overhead to actually fit the sales densities that we've got. In terms of US and the profit contribution, this is a key year, isn't it? I mean, in terms of we're adding a lot of selling space, and of course we're not opening any warehouses yet. So in other words, we're amortizing the overhead from that. I can tell you that every store we open, and that's what the model is all about, is will give a positive store contribution. So it should be a leverage thing. So I think looking over, you know, probably not achieved this year because we've got quite a... when you sign a lease, the cost starts coming through your P&L, even though your store isn't open. and then you can have a number of months before the store opens. So there's a lot of, if you like, pre-opening costs that are still within the P&L. But you should be expecting a really quite a steady climb in the net margin. Certainly we're getting to 2024. And I've got no reason to see why in the long term a margin from our US business in line with the average is entirely possible.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rita.
Thank you. We will now take our last question for today. And the last question comes from the line of Warwick Okines from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, John. Thanks for the marathon call. Two quick ones, if I may. The first is a clarification on Primark sales, and this risks being a bit of a stupid question, but you bridged most of the 6 percentage point gap between constant currency revenue growth and like for like. What was the other 100%? Is that some space reopening after lockdowns? And then secondly, on ingredients, you're clearly still seeing a lot of growth when others in the market are seeing destocking at their customers. Why do you think that is? Is that geography or product category within ingredients? Thanks very much.
Yes, okay. Great. Well, thanks, Warren. So, yes, so let's have a look at the bridge between the 10 and the 16%. So you're right. Thanks for pulling it down. So I think probably about 1% is the fact that last year, because the reaction to Omicron in the Netherlands and also in Austria meant that the stores closed there, not for a long period, but for maybe some weeks. And I think that really is contributing about 1%. So you go 10, 3 average selling growth, 2 store productivity, and then 1 for the stores that closed last year. Okay? So that I think is it. In ingredients, I think what's happening here, we've got a number of specialty ingredients, and you can imagine it's really all about the formulation of the product by our customers. I think we're all aware that for the FMCG clients mostly, that our customers, so that's Pharma as well, that a lot of new formulations were really put to one side. So it was concentrating on the higher margin stuff. All of that's come back, and it's come back in spades. So we're seeing a much higher level of, product innovation. And I think our teams have been very focused on it. I think at some point, Chris is with me, I think really a deeper dive into our ingredients businesses is worthwhile. You know, we'll get to a level of profitability here, Warwick, that, you know, not for too fine a point, so it won't have a 2 in front of it, but it will be a few hundred million. I think it's well worth really spending a bit more time with you guys on that. Because, we've got a, particularly in our specialty ingredients area, Fabienne is, if I may name check, one of our chief executives, is a very capable, very focused chief executive. And she's always been focused on the front end. And I think it's paying off in spades. So I think we've got some highly performing, commercial teams in that area that's coming through. Okay, Warwick, thank you very much. So listen, we're over time, and Warwick, thanks for describing it as a marathon. So hopefully not all of you are puffing and panting at the end of this, but hopefully you thought that was an efficient way of dealing with this morning. Thank you very much for your time.